Professor Malcolm Goetz, Associate Professor of Economics at Vanderbilt University. He has looked at the transit plan and has some ideas that I think will be very eye-opening to many people who are thinking about voting for this plan. Dr. Goetz, it's good to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the conversation.
Let me ask you the question. First of all, do you have a dog in this fight?
No. I'm an academic, and I study transit and transportation issues, and have been curious about them for decades.
And were you compensated in any way for this critique?
No.
This is just you looking at the facts and raising some concerns about the transit plan, correct?
That's correct.
Based on your knowledge as an economist. Okay, good. Well, we laid all that out. Let me just see if I can start. One of the things that you say in your report is that we here in Nashville could learn a lot from studying the mistakes made by Denver, a city of similar size who has already gone through a process much like we are contemplating. When you look at Denver, what conclusions do you draw? What mistakes did they make that we are about to replicate?
Well, Denver adopted a sales tax earmarked for transit in 1973, and they have built 86 miles of railroads in nine different routes over a four-county transit zone. All the counties are paying into the transit fund. But here, 40 years later, the time to work by car is 25 minutes compared to 24 minutes here in Nashville, and their time to work by transit is about 45 minutes compared to 44 here in Nashville. Congestion remains at the same level in Denver, despite their having built an extensive rail network.
And your point is that light rail may not be the best solution, that there's a lot of problem that comes with light rail.
It's expensive to build, expensive to operate. For billions of dollars, you get relatively few miles of service. And so many people have to use a bus or a car or some other way to get to a rail station. And then when they get near their destination, they have to transfer once again to another bus or a car to get to complete their journey. So building in transfers slows the trip and makes it more inconvenient.
And in Denver, after spending all this money, only about 7% of the people use the transit that's been built.
That's right. So a lot of effort putting into an extensive rail network by what you can afford with the rail, and still only 7% of the population of the central county travel by public transportation to get to work.
Tell me what happens when rail and traffic interact.
When we put street railways, so we put railways in the middle of streets, that tends to slow traffic. Typically would involve narrowing traffic lanes. It limits left-hand turns. Houston has the experience of collisions between the trains and both automobiles and pedestrians. Often the trains are given signal priority, that is, they get green lights through intersections, and that lengthens the length of time for red lights for traffic. So in a variety of ways, putting trains down the middle of streets restricts the flow of traffic.
Yeah, and you basically, your overall, there's something you describe in your first page about the iron law of traffic. Talk a little bit about that. No matter what you do to take cars off the road, it doesn't really make things that much better.
Yes. So many people assume there's a fixed number of trips to be made, and if we improve transit, more people will ride by transit. There'll be fewer people in automobiles, and traffic will flow more easily. But the alternative view is that the number of trips we make is flexible, and if it gets easier to make trips, we make more trips. So even if people move from cars to transit, other people will make more trips by cars, keeping congestion at the same level. And that's the experience in many cities, and there's extensive statistical analyses which supports the view that congestion is unaffected by the level of transit service.
Yeah, and on this one light rail in particular, you focused it in your report, and it's the one that would go out toward the Briley Parkway. You say that there's bus service there that is pretty equivalent to what, you know, what it takes to do with the light rail. It wouldn't save you much time to have the light rail, but you actually might see ridership drop if you replace the buses with light rail.
Today, we have a limited stop bus service called a bus rapid transit from Rivergate to downtown, and the proposed Gallatin Railway would replace half of that from downtown to Briley Parkway. So people coming from Rivergate and Madison might travel by bus to the old Kmart site and then would have to transfer to the train in order to complete their journey. The speed of the train is about 18 miles per hour, according to the proposal, and the limited stop bus service, the bus rapid transit today, moves at 16 to 18 miles per hour over the route. So it would be similar, but when you build in a transfer, you lose about 15% of the ridership because of the extra time and inconvenience of the transfer.
So we're going to spend millions of dollars to replace a bus system that is more effective and more efficient than the light rail will be.
The cost of that train route is $789 million for 6.4 miles of rail.
One of the things I want to ask you about has to do with the numbers. For example, what happens when the sales tax goes up? Because the sales tax is going to go up to pay for this transit system if approved.
It ramps up from later this year at 0.5% to a full percent in 2023. And in that year, they forecast $225 million will be raised by the sales tax here in Davidson County, the additional 1 cent. So that's a substantial amount of money and a significant burden on everyone who lives in Davidson County, and particularly on lower-income people who pay a differentially higher percentage of their income in sales tax.
And so if people are having to pay more for goods and services because of an increased sales tax, then they will then be seeking more money from their employer, and the employers will have to pay people more, et cetera. It does have a rippling effect through the economy.
It does indeed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, everybody talks about, you know, how we need to do something about transportation and that the tourists are going to pay for half of it. That's what you see on the commercials. Well, they're going to pay for that through an increase in the hotel-motel occupancy tax. But that could have a detrimental impact on tourism to the city, could it not?
Yes, indeed. The convention industry, for example, is very sensitive to prices. For large conventions, there's typically a professional convention planner who will get bids from multiple cities that can support a convention. And the bids are in terms of the rate for a room, for a big block of rooms, that includes the taxes. And so the convention planner then will choose among cities based on the gross price inclusive of taxes. An increase in taxes then will typically mean that the local hotel owners must reduce their price net of taxes in order to compete for the convention business. So while it's true that an out-of-town convention visitor is running their credit card through the hotel to pay for the bill, the burden of the tax is borne by the owner of the hotel because they have to accept a lower price net of the taxes.
All right. And then the other side of that, sort of a 1-2 punch when it comes to tourism, the hotel-motel tax hurts the ability of hotels to go out and attract people to come to Nashville. And then people will learn very quickly that if we're in the middle of building a tunnel, that the entire downtown area is torn up, and it will become a less desirable place to visit for a time, will it not?
Yes. It will be several years of construction going on with the tunnel and the rail routes in and out of town, yes.
All right. So it would seem to me that that would, if I were a business leader, and I counted on tourism, if I was in the hotel industry in this town, I counted on tourism, those were things that I'm not hearing very often from the other side.
That's correct.
All right. So in the grand scheme of things, I don't want to just wring our hands and say that there are no solutions. You actually do identify some technologies that might be helpful in reducing our traffic problem here in the Nashville area.
Mm-hmm. The car services, the on-demand car services, Uber and Lyft, are very successful and they are innovating rapidly. Both companies introduced pooled services in December, and a growing share of ridership are people sharing rides in Lyft and Uber. In San Francisco, Uber has introduced Express Pool, which invites people to walk a block or two to the pickup point and maybe a block or two from their leaving the automobile to their final destination for about a 60% discount in the cost of the ride. So Uber and Lyft are innovating with services that cost a lot less than their standard service does today, and it involves people sharing rides. And so these are attractive technologies that exist today.
Other solutions?
Waymo, a division of a unit of Google, began operating cars that have no attendant, no driver on board in the Phoenix area 2 weeks ago. So this is a technology that exists and is in operation, and they have ordered, I believe, 24,000 Chrysler Pacificas, which they will outfit as driverless vehicles for use in cities across the United States. For the final delivery on this order will be in 2022. So they are testing in multiple cities today. They've ordered the vehicles to bring a very large-scale cars on-demand car service, cars they operate, operate without drivers. And they expect, General Motors is in the same game, and they expect about a 40% discount or decrease in price as a consequence of being able to operate the cars without drivers.
Technology may answer some of our problems, as it often does. In the grand scheme of things, though, there are solutions that perhaps we're not looking at because we seem to be so focused on building light rail and digging a tunnel. Well, listen, I really appreciate you joining us here to help us understand this. And I don't think that people are getting the other side of the story is that, you know, when you raise taxes, when you raise the hotel motel occupancy tax, it will have an impact on the economy at a time when things are going pretty good. And these by the way, interestingly enough, because of these ride-sharing services, fewer people are actually taking public transportation right now. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly right. In nearly every city across the country, transit ridership is falling. Down 20% in Atlanta, down 20% in Charlotte, down 20% in Austin, down about 8%, I believe, in Denver. So Chicago is down 12%. So transit ridership, conventional rail and bus ridership is down significantly, and it has been declining here in Nashville for the last 3 years.
So it's going down at a time we're building more of it. Doesn't seem like it's a good recipe.